on today's Run to the Top podcast.
We know you're going to have loads on your foot and ankle, you know, several times your body weight, right? So when you break down how much load your calf muscles, your forefoot, your infoot actually see, depending on the joint, it's within 2 to 8 times body weight loads of the foot and ankle. So you've got to make sure that you've got proper control and support to withstand those loads stride after stride.
Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast from Runners Connect, where it's all about learning from the best and most inspiring minds in the sport. Together, we can train a smarter, healthier, and faster running community. Now here's your host, Stephanie K. Atwood.
Welcome. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, Boston Marathon qualifier, coach, and host for the Run to the Top podcast. How much credit do you give to your feet for making you a better runner? If you're like most of us, those feet get put in shoes and then you just hope they'll do their job. Well, maybe it's time to rethink the strategic value of those two extremities that connect you to the ground and push you forward with every single step. Our guest today is Jay DeSherry, and Jay is one of the foremost authorities on running biomechanics. Welcome to the Run to the Top podcast, Jay.
Thanks for having me, Stephanie. It's great to be here.
Yeah, it's good for you to be here. I've been trying to get this together for a long time, and the whole foot idea just seems like, whoa, we just don't pay enough attention to feet. So I think you're going to help clarify some of that for us.
Awesome.
Yeah. So let's get on with the interview, but first we'll take a very brief break to thank our wonderful sponsors here at Run to the Top podcast. This episode is sponsored by RaceFox, the first real-time digital device that gives you in-the-moment feedback on your strengths and weaknesses as a runner. We'll tell you later in the episode how this device works and how you can try it out for free. Okay, we are back at Run to the Top podcast with Jay DeSherry, physical therapist, biomechanics researcher, and author who has been very involved in the running community for quite some time. His current running focus is feet. I first met Jay in the San Francisco Bay Area at a U.S. track and field clinic where he was talking about running form and function. I was impressed by his level of knowledge and experience working with runners. Jay built his international reputation as an expert in biomechanical analysis, as director of the Speed Clinic at the University of Virginia, and now as director of the Rep Biomechanics Lab in Bend, Oregon. He is the founder and CEO of Mobo, a novel product that improves intrinsic foot control. And today's interview will be going over running mechanics and how integral the foot is in the whole process of making running happen. Thanks for being here, Jay.
Great to chat.
Okay, we're going to start with our first four, and those are very general questions. I'll ask you all four, and then you get to answer. How long have you been running? Where were you born? Where are you currently living, and what is your favorite current race distance?
I've been born, I'll tackle those a little out of order. I was born in New Orleans, Louisiana, and then I've been living in Bend, Oregon for the past 8 years now. How long I've been running has been, I would say, since high school, pretty much. I was a swimmer predominantly, but I started running in high school, and favorite place to run, trail. give me rocks and give me some vertical, and that makes me happy.
You got some trails up there in Bend for sure.
Oh yeah, good times.
Relatively flat ones, really, really steep ones, whatever. Good choices.
The steeper, the better for me.
All right. Then you must use poles as well.
No, I really I just love, I love almost like scrambly type, more adventure runs where it's more about just kind of covering point to point than just, you know, hitting a certain distance.
It's right.
It's fun. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, you're in the right area to be able to enjoy that outdoor geography.
Right.
Okay. So I've got something here and then a couple of questions for you. It's that research-driven focus and expertise in injury prevention, rehab, and performance training is something that you have focused on for many, many years. And now you've got something kind of new and more focused dealing with feet. So first tell us how you got started in the running business, and then we'll move into feet after that.
Yeah. So I think my career has been, I would say definitely different than most. I came out of PT school with, a passion to help athletes. And I realized that a lot of things I've been taught in school didn't work, and I was quite frustrated. And long story short, a bunch of things happened and ended up running a biomechanics lab at University of Virginia. And one day I went to our department chair and said, hey, we have like one of the literally the best lab in the entire country. We were the only facility in the U.S. that had an instrumented treadmill at that time. And that allows us to do some great research to look at multi-stride analysis. And basically said, research is great, having lots of fun doing this and learning new things, but what if we could actually open this lab up to individuals? And so we were the first place in North America and possibly the world that allowed, average Joe and Mary to walk in and to get an objective gait analysis and then correlate that back with musculoskeletal data. And then so we started to see things at a really fine level. Where you could correlate, what type of athlete walks in the door with mm-hmm. their running form. And then mm-hmm. you could actually, see, do the things we do actually improve your running, right? So it wasn't just like, oh, well, here's a bunch of fancy toys and here's why we're great.
Right.
But it was more tailored to, here's you, here's where we want you to be. Let's work on these things. We'll reassess you as we go and make you a better athlete. And it was a really interesting experience, I think, for myself, for our department, and I would say literally the country, because that approach has kind of blossomed. There's some of these, sprouting up here and there across the country right now. And it's great to see that. I mean, it's like, I think we live in an amazing time where technology can actually finally answer questions aside from just be cool.
I know. It's really interesting. I mean, there's so much stuff out there right now, and it's changing almost every day. And now that you can even have wearable technology, that really changes the whole dimension of being able to, get evaluated as a runner and the affordability of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. It's a great tool.
Now, so as you've been in this industry for a long time, you're a runner, you've been very involved in the lab, you've seen lots of average runners as well as elite runners, and you noticed a problematic trend. I'm taking this from your website, the wording, but athletes don't train their feet like they train the rest of the body. And this oversight leaves seconds on the clock and black holes in an athlete's preparation. So elaborate on that, please.
Yeah. So it's interesting. If you flash back, say 10, 12 years, I think the hardest thing in the world to do was to get runners to actually do some core work or do some dynamic stretching or do some type of hip activation sequence. And, it's funny, over the past few years, that's become a little more commonplace. And most runners are actually in a situation now where they, have some aspect that, hey, the things I do are important. And, for any of you out there who still believe that's not important, I would ask you to find me an elite athlete who's training, who does not do those things. Everyone who's, successful and interested in pushing the needle takes time and take care of their body comprehensively. So I would say there's much more of a comprehensive shift towards, training as an athletic individual, not just running, which is great. But in that discussion, I think it's interesting, we're a society that, we almost train what we see, right? We see big chest and we see back muscles. So we train those at the gym. We see our quads and hamstrings. We train those at the gym. And, our feet are these things stuck inside of shoes. And we don't really do anything for them, right? We just hope to buy the next shoe that's going to, carry us to salvation. And that doesn't always work. Your foot is a very unstable structure. It's 26 bones that have a lot of degrees of freedom, and they require a lot of proactive control. And I think that's just gotten lost. I think there's a disconnect as far as what we have to do. And lately, you've seen some people say, oh, well, I'll just work on balance training. And yeah, I stand on one leg. Well, okay, let's break that down. There's a very big difference between what I call reactive wobbling, right? Which is not really balancing, but you call it balancing. And a big difference in what we call proactive control, which is knowing how to engage the muscles in the feet properly, right? Same thing you do with the core, right?
So, hey, Jay, can you just say that again? That's reactive balancing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, reactive balancing
versus the proprioception.
Exactly. So reactive versus proactive, right? So when you look at reactive work, if I have you stay on one leg and, let's say we throw a ball back and forth or you turn side to side, what happens is most people tend to shift not just their foot and ankle, but their hip and also their trunk to try and maintain mm-hmm. support. And you're using big big segments of your body to wobble around. And all it does is actually impart more instability into your body. And when you look at what we want to do, it's called a, and there's different strategies. It's interesting. When you look at, we've known this for years. When you look at how people develop, when you're younger, and not just as a kid, but when you're younger, you tend to micro correct, right, from your foot and ankle. So say you're running on a trail and you hit a rock and your foot lands slightly differently. You don't have to think, mm-hmm. right? Your brain rapidly recorrects to drive the big toe down and support, right? So that happens, and it happens really well. And then as we age, for various reasons, as far as, again, not paying attention to our feet, not spending time, focusing on stride mechanics or, putting our body in overly cushioned shoes, whatever combination, we're not really sure exactly what happens, but the body tends to become disconnected. And so what we tend to see is as we age, folks go more into a hip and a trunk strategy, which means they shift and sway a whole lot for control. And again, that's not that rapid micro correction. And what we want to do is, you can retrain your brain's, proprioception, which is position sense. And we can retrain the ability to focus on the feet and to learn and find, and again, most importantly, feel position. And that's what we're trying to, get into these days. It's interesting to me, we talked about core stability for years and continue to talk mm-hmm. about that. And, mm-hmm. What core stability means is, and I use the word core stability, not core strength. Nobody can tell you how, quote, strong your core is. What we look at is timing, right? So all the research out there shows that individuals with good core control fire proactively. So what that means is you stabilize your trunk before you move your arm, before you move your hip, before you take a stride, before you run, cut, jump, right? And individuals with low back pain and with poor posture or function, the core does work, right? But it fires after, right? So you've got this reactive control where you're not really controlling your body very well. And there's a great article that came out by one of my doctoral students years ago, Patrick McKeon, which actually calls this idea behind should we have a foot core, right? So your spine is a bunch of bones that need some control and support. Well, guess what? Your foot's a bunch of bones that need a bunch of control and support. And it's pretty simple if you think about it. But again, like what's being done? Well, I'll just do balance, right? Let's like saying I'll just do crunches for my spine. We know that it's not the best way to train. And so when you look at this paradigm, we're trying to change this landscape of language to, look, you're a person. You're not a hip. You're not a spine, right? You're not a shoulder. You're a person. And when you look at, I've said this for years, you have to prepare for your sport. We know you're going to have, loads on your foot and ankle, several times your body weight, right? So when you break down how much load your calf muscles, your forefoot, your rear foot actually see, it's, depending on the joint, it's within 2 to 8 times body weight loads in the foot and ankle. So you've got to make sure that you've got proper control and support to withstand those loads stride after stride.
And how many injuries that are farther up in the body are directly related to not having the strength and flexibility that we need in our feet?
Tons. I mean, so it's a great question. I would say that, again, you're not just treating a foot and ankle, you're treating a body, right? And so your foot and your hip work intimately together to maintain what we call torsional, or think about rotational control of the lower leg. I'll give you an example here. Those of you who are listening and saw a picture of yourself at some point in the line in a race, and somebody takes a snapshot and you're kind of in mid stance and your knees kind of look like it's diving in. A lot of runners have seen this. Okay. You see in two dimensions, that knee diving in, your hip is not adducting or coming across your body. That doesn't happen, right? What you're seeing is a rotational change. Your hip and your foot and ankle collapse inward, and that makes your knee, come across, but it's a rotational shift. And so the fix for that, we say, we'll work on your hip. Well, yes, hip muscles are tremendously important in terms of providing leverage to steer that leg straight. But it provides the position awareness and that proprioceptive input is our foot, right? And so our foot and our hip work intimately to make sure we can steer the leg as we run. And that's the big take home is that, it's not a foot in isolation, it's a foot in conjunction with your whole body.
Yeah. And one of the things that I saw on your website was talking about big toe activation. And I'd like to hear more about that because I know that fits into this MOBO product that you have, but also that whole concept of using your big toe to, propel your body forward. Can you talk about that some?
Yeah. So every listener out there, I want you to look at your hand for a second. I want you to look at your fingers and you notice that your fingers have three joints in them. And now look at your thumb. You notice your thumb has two joints, right? So mechanically, right, just from an anatomic standpoint, your fingers have different functions in your thumb. Your fingers are designed for curling around things and your thumb is designed for opposing and locking down. Imagine you're trying to hit a nail with a hammer, right? You basically grab the hammer with your fingers and you don't keep your thumb in the air. You wrap your thumb around for your majority of your support. Mm-hmm. If you take your sock off, your shoe, look at your foot, it's the same kind of arrangement, right? You've got three joints in each one of your lesser toes, and lesser toes are driven by muscles that are in your shin, and their job is to curl, right? And they're great at picking your socks up off the floor. They're awesome for that. But when you curl those toes and you pick your pick your ball of your foot off the ground, you've lost support of the big toe. And the big toe's job is to drive down, not to curl. And so when I look at most athletes, what they've done is they said, okay, I'll work on my foot and ankle. And so we've taken, you know, a light TheraBand and just done foot sweeps, which I'm not saying it doesn't have its time. I mean, there's definitely a role, especially in rehab for open chain footwork. But again, like your ability as a runner is not going to depend on you just to swing your foot in the air. You have to have good control when your foot's on the ground. And so then we say, okay, well, let's do towel curls. You've probably seen that. You put towels on the ground, you just curl the towel back and forth, or you take buckets of marbles and move your marbles back and forth. All that does is reinforce the wrong pattern, right? That's teaching you to work your long flexors, and that teaches you to take the base of your big toe off the floor. So you're training a pattern to lose control within your foot. That just doesn't make any sense to me, right? And so what we've done is, what I've done is to shift my focus away from those lesser, those extrinsic curling muscles and stick it into helping folks stop gripping, but start driving down, right? So one of the key tenets of any foot rehab, so I don't care what you use, is that you're really, really cognizant of a proper big toe support, right? And so when I talk about the tripod, it's a little bit different. Some people call the tripod the heel, right? The outside of the forefoot and the inside of the forefoot. And that's not my tripod. My tripod is the outside ball of the foot, the inside ball of the foot, and the end of the big toe. And there's a very specific reason why we do that.
Okay.
When you look at running, right? If you're a rear foot striker, a midfoot striker, forefoot striker, it doesn't matter, right? The biggest torque you've got, the biggest challenge of your foot occurs just after your heel comes up off the ground. Okay. So if you don't know how to get your forefoot to work properly to control and stabilize your rear foot and everything else up the chain, that's when you see collapse and breakdown in form. Right. So we've just basically, again, objectively look at this problem through gait analysis to find out, you know, when does the foot collapse most? And we've done research on this to find out it's after the heel comes off the ground. So, you know, it's interesting to me, you look back at the shoe industry, and for years we've had these dual density posts, they stick in shoes to, quote, stop the foot from moving. You know, I've always thought it laughable. I mean, we published a paper back in 2009, which showed that, the foot's most collapsed just after the heel comes off the ground. And if your effort is to try and stop the heel from moving, that little post that the industry sticks in there isn't even touching the ground at the time it's theoretically needed most, right?
Yeah.
So, it's not the right answer, right? The right answer is to not seek the holy grail of a shoe, but to seek the holy grail of a better, stronger, stable foot to control those loads.
Couple questions then. One has to do with shoes. Are these wider shoes now that have a bigger toe box? Do they give us the potential to use our big toes more, better?
They give you the potential to use your entire forefoot better. You know, it's if you look at, you know, just mechanics, right? A wider structure is always more stable than a narrow structure. One of the things which has just quite honestly driven me nuts over the years, and this isn't a running issue, this is all sports. You know, we tend to think that the more tightly gripped we are, the better it is. I mean, soccer athletes want these super tight shoes. Runners think it has to be a super tight shoe. Cyclists want a super tight shoe. I don't know. I wish we could just stop this, right? I mean, when you load your foot, it expands, period. I've got pictures of this in both of my books, in Running Rewired and Anatomy for Runners, that when you load a foot, your foot splays out, right? And so runners have a sense that they want a tight, snug, you know, shoe, but your foot needs to expand. And if it can't expand, you have a much harder time, using your structure. I mean, imagine if I tried to, if I asked you to, flex your bicep. And I basically kind of compress it with my hands and flex your bicep. It's like, please get it off of me. let the foot splay, right? Let it actually expand for better control.
Okay. So second kind of question on that. If we're running in shoes or if we're using, using our feet for power, then that big toe activation, what is the dynamic that allows that both when we're running and then also with this new product that you have that, deals with proprioception and big toe activation, how do those fit together to make us faster?
Yeah, so that's the take home, right? So when you're looking at that function, we said little toe's job is to grip, big toe's job is to drive down, right? And we look at running, but running, cutting, jumping, any land-based kind of plant sport, you need to be able to drive down with the big toe for support. Your big toe provides the vast majority of control in the foot. About 75 to 85% of the control comes from that big toe. And if that big toe is not solidly planted and functioning properly, we tend to see imbalances, right? People tend to spin in, spin out, collapse the arch, cut their push off short, minimize push off. So from a stability standpoint, right, it affects the tissue load. So let's just give an example here. If the big toe is working properly, the muscles inside your feet, we'll refer to what's called the flexor hallucis brevis and the abductor hallucis. Those of you who are type A listeners can go look at that in your research or in your atlas you have at home. But those two muscles' job is to plant and give a solid foundation for the big toe. And so if that happens, the arch becomes stable, right? And so with a stable arch, now I can pivot and roll over at my ankle, and then I push off stride after stride. So all is well. Contrast that with somebody who has poor foot control. We basically contact the ground, and our big toe doesn't do its job, and the arch collapses. And as the arch lowers, what happens is we can just pick a random injury here, right? We'll call the posterior tibialis, which is one of the muscles that causes shin splints. The rear foot twists excessively in the forefoot, and that twists out of what we call our safe zone, right? So tissue strain is defined as length under load. So if the tissue length gets too long, what happens is you've now put excessive strain in the posterior tib, and it starts to get overloaded and starts to break down. And then you say, I have shin splints, right? So, and so can you strengthen your posterior tibialis? Of course you can. But the biggest thing I tell people is stop punching yourself in the face. Okay. If you need to, the first thing you have to do is unload the problem, right? Your posterior tib broke down and got weak and needs to be strengthened and improved. Sure. But you know what? If you had a better, stronger forefoot, that posterior tib never would have been under more strain to begin with, and you would have been symptom free. Mm-hmm. So that's just one example of how, a better functioning forefoot can improve the durability of structures within the body.
And how do we go about doing that?
Yeah, so it comes into getting into that big toe, right? So, one of the things we try and do is I always tell folks, I don't want to tell you what not to do. I want to help you figure out what to do. So over the course of my career, I developed a very big cluster of things I use that's actually had very good outcomes in improving foot function. And again, using my lab, seeing that directly transfer back into better running gait. So it's not just my opinion. We're actually seeing things improve objectively. And that's what we want, right? I want to help you. So, the reality is one of me and there's millions of runners. And so past several years, I've tried to figure out, is there a better way to make a tool to help people actually find this and feel this without having to have somebody in front of them and teach them all these things? And that's the prototype for Mobo was born. So I literally went and just made one with a jigsaw, and then realized that I couldn't get these accurately done on a mass product scale. So I bought my own CNC machine, and learned how to, make some design code and then make these things on my CNC machine and made a bunch and they work great.
Wow.
And so it was like really awesome. But then I was like, wait, I don't want to sell just three of these. I want to sell more. So, So I made some connections and figured out how to mass produce some things and lo and behold, here we are. So Mobo is designed to kind of, I wouldn't say force, but cue you into putting load through the big toe, right? We cue you to get those intrinsic muscles, the muscles that start and end inside the foot. If you like to use that word foot core, we'll use the word foot core, right? They teach you to train your foot core to work and force you to almost like think how to get your big toe to work properly.
Now, Jay, I don't know a bunch about the product, but I have looked into it. And I also know, you know, that lots of people use these soft kind of balance things to, you know, to try and work on their feet. What is different about Mobo, and also how would it fit into a week of training?
Excellent question. Okay. So those of you who have ever been to a PT clinic or to a sports performance facility or anything and had a clinician or a trainer or somebody tell you to stand on a wobbly, you know, piece of foam, I want you to go back to them and say, why did you have me do this? Okay. And they'll tell you, oh, to make it harder. Okay. Mm-hmm. Let's back up for a second. When you look at how you control your balance and position sense, use three primary mechanisms. One is vision, right? We use our eyes to orient us in space. The second is vestibular or inner ear fluid, right? We use that to help us to right our head. And the third thing is proprioception, sense on the ground, right? And so If you look at all this work on, if you want to call it balance training, whatever simple word you like to use, what we're trying to do is improve position sense, right? Not your eyes, not your vestibular system, but your position sense. And when you put somebody on soft, squishy surfaces, you're actually taking away proprioceptive input, which makes it harder to learn proper control. So I know that those of you who've been on these squishy pads get there and it feels harder. It does, because there's nothing solid under your feet. And what happens is we just tend to what's called invert or stand on the outside of the foot. And we, again, wobble mostly from our hip and from our trunk. That's not training the proper strategy. And those of you who are still confused, if you look at how you train vestibular patients, patients who have trouble with inner ear balance, you actually put them on a soft, squishy pad to take away proprioception so that you force them to improve their vestibular and their eye input, right? That's the exact thing we don't want to do when we train proprioception.
Interesting. Interesting. How did you figure this out? Or what kind of helped lead you in the direction of seeing that something that was more stable was better?
Oh, I mean, we learned this back in school. Like that's why it's funny. This isn't something that's new. I mean, if you look at how you train balance response, this has been taught for, you know, years, 20, 30 years. And, you know, since that time, there've been papers that come out that show when you put athletes on soft, stable surfaces, we tend to land more unstable. We actually land stiffer. And also what happens is you compromise this thing called the stretch shortening cycle, which is how quick and how reactive muscles can be. So, you know, one of the things about running is your stance time is short. You have to be able to, you know, rapidly reproduce force. And so standing on soft, squishy surfaces not only impairs your balance response, not only is a bad environment to learn from, but actually degrades how quickly we can get off the ground. That's a complete lose across the board and a waste of your time. So that's the don't do. Okay. So I don't want to scare people, but there's a reason we train. We train smartly to get better. Don't train stupid to get worse. Yeah. So that's one thing. So now to answer your question, so if soft squishy is bad, what should you do? Right. Your foot wants to be on a hard, stable surface. Right. So obviously there's a role for training on the floor, because the floor is what? Flat and hard. Okay. And when I say this, those of you who have carpet, that's okay too. I mean, you just want to be on, again, that big mushy foam pad. But you want a solid, consistent surface underfoot. And so there's a place to train the floor, and training, you know, single leg supports on the floor is great if you know what to do. Again, most runners are in that gripping strategy and don't know how to drive down. So what I did for Mobo is said, okay, let me put a hard surface underfoot, right? So it's a solid piece of bamboo. And what we did was we put a cutout under the little toe. So there's a solid platform under your big toe, and there's no contact under your second through fifth toes. And so what happens is individuals who tend to kind of grip, right, and they want to curl the toes to take the ball, the foot up off the ground, they get on the board and they fall over. And not to fall, but, you know, they feel pretty quickly. Unless I get my load over to my big toe, I can't do anything, right? So what the board is designed to do is to cue you into proper function. So that's one unique aspect of the board is how the construction of it is. It provides support where we want it and doesn't give you support where we don't.
Jay, what would be an actual exercise that you might do on the board, and how, because I don't think I made this very clear, but during a week of training, how often would you be using this, or is it just special use, or, you know, how does it kind of fit into our trying to improve?
Yeah, so balance and proprioception training doesn't require an hour and a half a day, right? I mean, balance and proprioception training is best done in small doses throughout the week. So the best thing to do is to figure out, hey, look, I'll spend, you know, 5 to 8 minutes, 2 to 3 times a week working on this stuff, right? I mean, this is really simple. I tell folks, you know, put your board in your living room if you're doing other things for balance, for foot and ankle work, whatever, but put your tools in your living room. Every time you walk by them, jump on them and play for a little bit, right? And it shouldn't require 25 pieces of equipment. It's pretty simple. So the idea is the more frequently you expose your brain to that proprioceptive challenge, the more we tend to learn. So small doses frequently are much better than saying, okay, it's foot day, I'll do 45 minutes of work.
Right.
That's not just,
That really helps. And what am I actually doing on this board when I'm standing on it?
Yeah. So, we've got various things you can do on it, right? So, it has these fins that mount from the bottom. And so the fins basically allow you to adjust what the board's doing. I would say that the two simplest exercises. One of them is called a foot band twist, right? So what you do is you take your board, you put the fins, and the fin boxes are numbered 1 through 4, and you put your fins in the even numbered boxes. So say you want to work your right foot, you put your board right side up, and you put the fins in the bottom of the 2 and 4 boxes, and then the board wobbles, right? It tilts side to side, and it tilts side to side in a certain axis, and we designed it to mimic the axis in your body of pronation and supination. So instead of just building a product that, you know, just for product's sake, we said, okay, let's look at the anatomy. Let's figure out what the anatomy does and then build a product to challenge that structure. So the board pivots.
I like that.
Yeah. So the board pivots at 45 degrees and then it pivots 15 degrees off axis. So that's the exact, axis that your subtalar joint sees. So we're training anatomical control versus something aberrant. So, this first exercise, what you do is you'll stand on the board and you're going to take a TheraBand and just tie it onto a door or a squat rack or whatever you have next to you. At any point, it's pretty simple. Mm-hmm. But what you're doing is you're going to twist your body basically toward the pinky toe and back towards the big toe. And the goal is to keep the board as still as possible. And as you turn externally towards your pinky toe, it forces you to counter-stabilize and drive the big toe down. And most folks jump on the board and their eyes instantly go, wow, I've never felt this before, right?
Yeah.
And so, we're just cueing you on how to get into your foot. And so that's the first thing, that aha moment of people go, oh, I get it. And it's funny. Anybody who's never been on this thing, the second you get on it, they've been on it like for 10 seconds, they go, oh. I just totally get it, right? So, and then that's a win for me. And people can feel stuff and go, that's what I've been hearing all along, various papers and, you know, articles I read outside the runner's world. It's like, just, you have to find the foot. But people have been taught to grip and get away from, you know, that proactive control. It doesn't work. So that's one of the best exercises. The other second exercise, my favorite, is what we call the foot rock. And what you do is you keep the board in that same pivot direction. And what you do now is you don't use a band or anything for this, but you're standing on it and you actually want to try and rock the board side to side. So we try and have you, and again, the fins are numbered, but you try and drive down so the number 1 on the front corner hits and then back so the number 3 in the back corner hits. And so you're training pronation and supination, literally. And then we have you work on that for a little bit.
Wow.
And then we take the fins off and we put the fins, we switch them 90 degrees. So now you're in the 1 and the 3 slots. And now what that does is train the perineals, which are a neglected muscle group. They're on the outside of the shin and they travel down the outside of the leg, around the outside of the ankle, under the foot, and actually attach, guess what? Right at the bottom of the big toe. Their only job in life is to try and drive that big toe down for stabilization. So those two patterns of rocking the foot back and forth, again, cue you to feel that's exactly where that balance point has to be. And so we're trying to improve awareness. So I'd say those two are the biggest ones that I think are good for that kind of aha moment. But then what else can you do with it? I mean, I would view our board like a TRX. You can, we have 28 exercises on our website, but you know, people invent different things at TRX all the time, right? So, I mean, you can do deadlifts on the Mobo. You can do squats on the Mobo. You can do, you pick your poison, right? You can do Bulgarian split squats. I mean, you can do lots of stuff with loaded movement. You can do balance and proprioceptive work. It's designed to try and, you know, integrate into the model that you've already got. So it's like saying, look, if we're going to do a split squat, well, great. But you know what? Let's also add a foot challenge into that to help you integrate your foot control with your hip. Because that's why you're doing this, right? Mm-hmm. You're not doing an exercise to get better at a split squat. You're doing an exercise to get better as an athlete for a better run. So, and that's important. When you're doing any type of balanced, proprioceptive, or strength plan, is this stuff going to make a difference the way I run? If it's not, don't waste your time, right? I mean, you're not a bodybuilder, you're an athlete.
Yeah, a question for you related to that. And it is, what kind of results have you seen from this specific type of training? And how much faster, you know, percentage-wise or minutes-wise or whatever, would I be able to get if I improve my big toe strength and ability to the power in my big toe?
Yeah, so great question. I'll quote two things. I will quote so people don't think I'm biased, right? The general research has shown a few things, right? So we found that when you just specifically train your foot and ankle control, okay, you get improvement in the strength in your foot. You get improvement in your ability to run, cut, and jump. You get improvement in jump height. Okay. You get improvement in cutting speed.
Right? Ah.
So the idea is, you're training part of your body. Like people say, oh, wow, that's interesting. Well, if you trained your hip strength, you expect to see a change in performance too, right? Like it's not like your foot's this thing.
Right.
Like, oh, that's different. It's just part of your body. So the research overwhelmingly supports this. Okay. And there's not that many studies. I'll put that out there. There's only like probably 8 studies that have been well done looking at foot control and foot strength and performance. In my work, because again, I have my own gait lab, the things I look at are, can I see changes in what's called the ankle eversion moment, which looks at how the foot and ankle are loaded during stance. I look at change in whole body sway of the ground reaction force, look at can the runner become more stable. I look at a bunch of timing aspects. I look at running economy measures. We look at lots of data points, right? But it lets us look at, can someone achieve a more stable position and can someone actually improve their running economy? Going back to the economy standpoint, if you have good foot and ankle control, you can adapt your foot down to the ground, you can stabilize, and you push off and you roll through your foot and ankle to let you kind of, again, store and release energy in the Achilles tendon. And so if we tend to see people have compensated foot and ankle control, they stay on the outside of their foot too long because they don't know how to use their big toe, it's going to collapse excessively. Mm-hmm. We tend to see the spring, right, that's what your Achilles tendon is, the spring of energy transfer across the rear foot is not optimized, right? And so we typically see that folks, when they improve their ability to stabilize their segmental control, they improve how those springs work that attach to those segments. And so we tend to see improvements.
Interesting.
Yeah, in running economy too. So the whole idea here is to, again, just train part of you that's part of you as an athlete.
Yeah. And so it would be hard to measure, like so many things, it would be hard to measure specifically how much you might improve. But the concept, it makes so much sense that if your big toe is more involved in that forward motion, especially, or in that proprioceptive ability, then you're going to improve.
Yeah. And again, it's again that when you said, how much. I mean, I'm going to give you some numbers here. They're all over the place because, again, it's hard to look at, research, you look at, okay, well, what's the average result of a group of people, right? So how many people came in okay versus how many had, two ankle sprains in the past they didn't mention to the researcher group. So, and then, or if you look at an injured population, so how many people with, chronic ankle sprains tend to improve? So, I'd say range as an improvement can be small, that's, high single digits from 7 to 8% up to 40%, right? So it depends on where you are, where you're starting from. But especially for those of you who, it's funny to me too, people say, oh, I had an ankle sprain. You just kind of blow it off. Balance is altered with people in ankle sprains. And the research overwhelmingly shows that people with more than one ankle sprain develop this thing called chronic ankle instability. And they tend to land differently. They land in a very vulnerable position where the foot's more likely to sprain because it's more plantar flexed and inverted. And so that's the exact position you sprain in. And we want to try and train people to get out of that bad mechanism, right? And so the reason their position's altered is not because the ligament was torn once. Ligaments heal pretty strong. It's because a neural network, right, that innervation and position sense we have within the ligament was torn. When that gets torn, we lose awareness. So again, we can improve someone's ability to again, find and stabilize their foot. So that's important. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, one of the things is what happens when you train? You get tired, right? You know, so there's research to show that fatigued feet move more and fail to stabilize the same way that, you know, we do when we're fresh. So, you know, again, you don't train, if you're training to run a half marathon, you don't train to run 1 mile, you train to run 13 miles, right? And you train to run hopefully with good form over that whole 13 miles. So again, you can improve the control and strengthen your foot to help you control things for a longer period of time. So it's why when people say, which percent improvement, you're asking a very open-ended question. But I would say significant, right? Depending on what you're looking at.
Yeah. Now, a couple of questions here. I know you mentioned this earlier in the interview, and part of what this product does for you and for us is it allows us to work together without having to be so close that we actually come in to see you.
Right.
And it also gives us something much more tangible than a book, which is, you know, books are great, and I know you've written some. I hope we have a chance to talk about them a little bit. But it's the being able to actually have some kind of tangible connection with something, at least for me, tactile, you know, is so much more meaningful as a way to learn and to train.
Yeah. I've always said, I said this for years, the more you want to help an athlete, the more you want to shut up and let them feel proper control, right? When you feel something, you learn it.
Now, also, I wanted you to clarify proprioception versus balance, because in some ways they're definitely related, but they're not the same thing. So can you clarify some of that?
Yeah. So proprioception. So you can just take those of you listening, take your hand, put it in front of you and open it up, and you can see that your hand's open and you can feel your hand's open. Right. And now I want you to take that same hand and put it behind your back, and you can tell if your hand's open or closed without looking at it. Right. That's proprioception. Right. Proprioception is actually a sensory aspect. Right. So what do I feel? And so when you feel better position sense, you can then do a better job of using your muscles and brain to make to move, right? So balance is this kind of gross thing we kind of look at, just like, you know, it's a kind of a layman's term, right? Proprioception is how do I feel orientation within my body to then make a decision on how to move? And so the whole idea is we move based upon how we feel. You know, when you're running, you don't look down at your foot and go, wow, great job, foot. You know, I can see my foot moving every single stride, right? It just happens. And the more connected you are inherently with those foot mechanics, the better the foot can actually function.
Okay. Question here, or actually kind of a statement that I'd like you to talk a little bit more about. It says, and this is some of this is from your website, Jay's personal mission statement is, quote, if you are going to compete, show up ready, unquote. And he believes every athlete deserves a chance to achieve their best from the ground up. So talk about that a little bit more.
Yeah. So
as you said earlier, you know, these are all interrelated. I mean, we have a whole body, we have a brain, all that stuff. So yeah, just give us a little bit more of a kind of a comprehensive explanation on this.
Yeah. I'll say a little humorous thing, which I don't mean to offend most of your listeners, but somebody always asked me, what's your next book going to be called? And I said, oh, easy, Running Injuries. It's Your Own Damn Fault. And I say that because, you know, most people don't, and people are shocked, like, really? And yeah, it's like, you know, you say, okay, I want to go distance. Well, great. Are you preparing to do that? Well, I'm running. Okay. What else are you doing? Well, I'm running. Right. And so I know people say, hey, I just want to run and I want you to run too, but I can tell you conclusively, the research can tell you conclusively, you put a panel of experts up there, everyone will tell you the same thing. Every runner out there in the world, please forget anything I'm talking about today. If you remember one thing, drop one run per week and work on some strength and balance work. You will have exponential improvements in your body's ability to be consistent, train injury free, and be durable throughout a long career as a runner. Okay.
Nice.
I mean, you know, running requires a lot of, you know, it asks a lot of your body. It's not low loads applied for a long period of time. It's very, very, very high load applied for a long period of time. And so, you know, if you want to compete, show up ready, right? If you were looking to train comprehensively, you know, and so, you know, I've put tools out there. Other people put tools out there. I mean, as an athlete, you need to have look in the mirror and say, is this important to me? Yes. Okay, great. What am I doing? Now, I know people are busy, right? So I talked earlier, if you're running 5 days a week, drop one day a week and make that a strength and proprioception day. That's one option, right? Or you can say, hey, look, before I jump out and go for my run, I'll do, 5 to 8 minutes. Like, how long is that? Not long at all.
Right.
To get some things kind of triggered, right? So it could be some dynamic stretching, could be some balance work, could be, various things out there, but get your body to start to move out of that kind of one plane activity and start to think and feel and move better. Get away from stretching. Okay, stretching is, unless you're truly tight, you don't have to stretch, but start to think about using these movements as a kind of dynamic warm-up for your sport. And so, I try to put tools out there, research out there. I teach clinicians internationally on this stuff, and help talk to and engage runners. And those of you listening, there's a big difference between having things done to you, right? So getting massage or getting, using these Theraguns are out there now and all these fancy toys. I mean, they're great. It feels nice to get a massage. Don't get me wrong, but to improve requires you to own movement, to own control, own the way you move. And guess how you do that? Not by having someone stick something on you and walk away, but by being involved and learning how to move. And we learn through movement. I mean, that's really simple.
That's really, really useful and very inclusive of everything that you're doing when you're running. I wanted to ask you about your books because you've written at least Running Rewired and Anatomy for Runners. Maybe there's some more there. I think there are. You've also written for magazines. You consult and teach for footwear companies, the cycling industry, the U.S. Air Force, U.S. Track and Field, and USA Triathlon. So besides feet, what else do you write about, and what other kind of information might you be sharing with our listeners who are interested in the whole runner, obviously?
Yeah, I mean, I put tons of tools out there to try and help spread the message on this. We've done huge intervention programs for the U.S. Air Force. I mean, it all goes back to the same thing. What are you doing to prepare yourself as a runner, right?
Uh-huh.
And that's what we try and break down. So, if you want to think about like tenets of, what do you need to run effectively, and effectively meaning, efficiently, but also to remain durable, right?
Right.
You have to show up with really good posture awareness. That is a non-negotiable skill. I was talking about the things that you as an athlete have to bring to the table. And when you talk about better posture alignment, you're talking about orienting yourself properly over your foot. And runners get tired. We said this before. What do people tend to do? They tend to kind of slump back in the back seat or tend to lean forward as they get fatigued. And that changes the entire dynamics of your running stride. Like, it cracks me up. People want to have a conversation. What's the best way to run? Well, you know what? If you would just concentrate on the best way to stand and walk, right, and find and feel that position and carry that over into your running gait, that would solve like 20 problems that you already have. That's one of the cornerstones. You have to look at good postural control. If those of you want to look at this, you can look at, I made a simple little video. It's on our MOBO website, our MOBO blog. If you just go to at MOBO.board on Instagram, or you can go to nathletesbody.com. It's my website on the internet. It's a quick little minute and a half video we made on how to find proper posture. But basically, it's real simple. You stand up. You drop your chest until you feel weight split evenly between your feet. You point your palms forward to bring your shoulder blades back and down. And that's your kind of set position, right? And then you go for your run. And then what you're going to do after a half a mile, you're going to stop and you're going to check that again. Drop your chest down. Make sure your shoulder blades in proper position. Run another half mile. Stop. Reorient. And you do that until it starts to feel natural, right? I mean, you're just trying to build that position sense in your upper body, right? So that's one thing that's important.
Mm-hmm.
Core control is important. So this is not how long you can hold a plank. Running is not a static task, right? I don't care if you hold a plank for 1 minute or 2 minutes. What happens is you get tired, you start to lock up and use extensors and other things. I want to help you learn to run with your core properly, which is a rotational based challenge. Because when you run, what do you have? Counter rotation of your upper body and lower body. So I'm a big fan of training rotational based core work, right? So there's tons of exercises we put out there in Running Rewired, which get into how you actually improve this skill, right? So that rotational aspect deals with counter rotation of upper body and lower body. And when you allow your body to counter rotate under control, we tend to see a runner move generally forward. When we see athletes with poor rotational control, we tend to see athletes have more of a lateral shift imparted to them as you run. A simple way to explain this, if I'm running next to you, you don't want me to push you sideways from your shoulders every step. You'd be like, right. Please leave me alone.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, poor rotational control, you're doing that to yourself, right? You're literally causing a lateral shift every time you run. What's that do? Well, that increases strain everywhere, right? We're not just talking about foot and ankle or just your hip. You're talking about the whole body has more lateral load to it. Let's make running easier, right? So that's where we look at the rotational side. Next thing is looking at hip control, right? So hips do three important things. They steer my leg, right? They're big rotational stabilizers. They have a big function in postural control. They actually do change how your pelvis sits on top of your hip. And they're important for propulsion, right? And so most athletes tend to be very quad heavy and very glute light in terms of that kind of autonomic recruitment.
Mm-hmm.
And we want to shift that, again, that idea we mentioned before on reflexive versus proactive, right? I want to have you proactively aware and able to fire from the hips to make sure we can get that, you know, get the body steering and propelling forward. And then going down to the foot and ankle, right?
Right.
We talk about trying to improve that connection and make sure that the whole system, you know, has sense of contact, right? I mean, if the only organ you've got to give you position sense is on the ground, and all you did was put an overly cushioned shoe between you and the floor, good luck having things look good upstream, right? So we want to, again, train that response to make sure that everything is proper input so that your brain can get better output to move you better, more efficiently. And yeah, keep you durable and keep you out there having fun. That's what we're trying to do.
Yeah, that's right. And to be active for the rest of our lives.
Right. I mean, yeah, people come all the time and say, oh, I want to hit this time. Well, great. I want you to hit that time too. But you know what? I also want you to be running in 30 years.
Yeah.
So, you know, and keep your own parts. I want you to have your own needs when you're 70, right? And not have synthetics. So it's, you know, this is a health conversation. I would say that most runners don't train very healthy. I mean that very bluntly. You know, they're pushing the needle every day and grind themselves down, and they're not thinking about short-term and long-term health, right?
Right.
It's not just getting more sleep. It's taking care of your body.
Yeah.
And this is a part of it. And people say, oh, you're giving other stuff to do. No, I'm giving you a plan to keep doing what you love, right? And that's what we're trying to do.
Anyone who has ever tried to improve running times while staying injury-free knows how difficult it can be. So much of it comes down to form, something that is hard to change without a dedicated coach. But most of us don't have the luxury of someone watching every step we take and offering in-the-moment feedback until now. With RaceFox, you can have your coach in your ear always. RaceFox is the world's first real-time digital coach for runners, giving in-the-moment feedback on your strengths and weaknesses as a runner. RaceFox uses a chest sensor to collect full-body data and provide personalized training to help you reach your goals as a runner. And right now, you can try it out for free. Just head to runnersconnect.net/RaceFox and use the code RTTT, 1R, 3Ts, to get a free tryout and 2 months for the price of one. Once you download the RaceFox app to your phone or smartwatch, sync the app to your Polar H10 heart rate monitor and start the tryout. This 15-minute exercise will give you real-time feedback on your performance and form. After the tryout, summary screens take you through your strengths and weaknesses and even give you projections for future race times. Again, to get started, go to runnersconnect.net/RaceFox and get running. Use the referral code RTTT, 1R, 3Ts, to get a 2-month subscription for the price of one. Welcome back. You've been listening to Run to the Top podcast with Jay DeSherry, whose thing these days is feet. Without our feet, we would be very different runners, right? Okay, Jay, we're heading into the final kick. Are you ready for this?
I'm ready.
Okay, a favorite local training run.
You're in Bend, Oregon. You're going to drive down Skyladder Road until it turns to gravel, and it's the base of Tumalo Falls. It's a huge waterfall right in the parking lot, and you're going to run up a trail called North Fork. It goes up about 1,400 feet in about 3 miles, and there's waterfalls the entire way.
Wow.
You're going to take a right. You're going to run through some alpine terrain up in the trees for about a few miles, and then you're going to make a right-hand turn, and you're going to drop down Farewell Trail. You're going to bop down some nice alpine forest, and pretty soon as it opens up, you'll turn around. You have a view of the Three Sisters, Broken Top, Mount Bachelor, and Tumalo. It's gorgeous.
Oh my gosh.
The best bang for your buck out there.
All right. Sounds good. And those waterfalls, do they run all year?
They do.
Wow, because you're in Oregon, you get a lot of water up there.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of moisture.
It even might be raining when you do this run, right?
It could be, or it could be snow, yeah. There you go.
Okay, how about a recommended book, research, or video that would interest our listeners?
I hate to be self-serving, but I would say Running Rewired. I would like to point people that direction. Anatomy for Runners would be out there. Sports Gene by Dan Epstein. If you haven't heard that, that's a great one. If wants to check that out. And then as far as video, I'd point people to video with that posture video. I think that's one of the, that's for bang for your buck, the video I think is a minute and 35 seconds. Mm-hmm. And if you can put that into practice, it will help you more than anything you've read on running in the past, years.
Yeah. Okay. That's super. We can, we will include all of this in our notes, in our show notes, so people can definitely refer back to this after listening to this podcast. And another person that you might recommend that we interview for the podcast.
Chris Johnson. A good friend of mine up in Seattle area. He's amazing. He's another gait researcher, kind of guru like myself. He's wonderful. He and I collaborate in projects and work with runners all the time. He's a great guy. Love him.
Okay, super. So now, Jay, please give us contact information, how our listeners can stay in touch with you and all of the resources that you offer.
Yeah, so the link to my lab is reporgan.com. That's the research lab I run. And then you can find out about Mobo Board at moboboard.com. You can find us on Instagram at mobo.board. And you can also find an athletesbody.com.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing with us. This has been really useful information. And this whole big toe thing makes so much sense to me. So now I have a lot more understanding of how to actually implement getting a stronger big toe and how that connects with the whole rest of our body all the way up. Thanks so much, Jay.
Awesome, Stephanie. Thank you so much.
You've been listening to Jay DeSherry, Director of the Rep Biomechanics Lab in Bend, Oregon, whose research-driven focus and expertise in injury prevention, rehab, and performance training has helped athletes around the world. And Jay has developed a wonderful product, Mobo is its name. So check that out for a better understanding of how to use your big toe and your feet in the whole running process. Thank you, our audience, for joining us for today's podcast, Run to the Top. And please follow us at the Runners Connect Winner Circle on Facebook by going to runnersconnect.net/FB and subscribe to Run to the Top podcast at runnersconnect.net or on Apple Play, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, etc. Then you'll be notified every week when the new episode is published. And thank you, each of you, for listening. We'll be back next week with another super interview to entertain, educate, and inspire you as you head out on your running workout. This is Stephanie K. Atwood, your host with Run to the Top, wishing you a great week of running.
Thanks for listening to the Run to the Top podcast from runnersconnect.net.